Sabrosura pa ti que que.
Hello everyone, this is Pam de Café con Pam, the bilingual podcast that features Latine and people of the global majority who break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place. Welcome to episode 299 of Café con Pam. Today, we have a conversation with Andrea Campos. Andrea is a Mexican-American illustrator and visual artist based in LA. She was raised in Chicago and made her way to the West Coast in 2015 in search of warmer weather and her version of the American dream. In January 2020, after nearly a decade in marketing, Andrea decided to shift her career focus and become a photographer. Her timing could not have been better because just weeks later, the pandemic hit and every production she had committed to being a part of shut down. Like so many others at the time, Andrea became unemployed overnight and felt anxious and overwhelmed by the state of the world. So she turned to art as a way to make sense of it all. Andrea drew and drew and eventually started sharing her art via Drea's Doodles on Instagram. Within months, Andrea's work started to go viral, catching the attention of authors, agents, and even a few celebrities, including Jimmy Fallon and Jennifer Lopez, who invited Andrea to illustrate their debut bilingual children's book, Con Pollo. Today, Andrea is a New York Times best-selling illustrator, visual artist, and creative producer who is pursuing her dream to connect with others and spread positivity through her playful, colorful creations. The daughter of immigrants, Andrea is committed to being inclusive in her storytelling and hopes that her work will not only spark joy in people's lives, but also share the joy of BIPOC experience. Listeners, this conversation with Andrea was really fun and inspiring. And as you know, I recently had this hospitalization and that has led me into slowing down a lot and doing things that nurture me. And one is drawing. And so I really enjoyed this conversation with Andrea because we went into the journey of becoming an artist and what it's like to even accept being an artist, accept creativity as a profession, which as you listen to us, you will hear during our conversation how being an artist, a creative, someone who makes a living off of creativity is not something so celebrated, especially in our Latina community, because there's some kind of stigma around it. Pero bueno, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Andrea. We talk about so many things, one being choosing creativity and joy to feed our soul, because especially in the state of the world, I feel like we've forgotten to nurture that inner child of ours. And one way to do it is through having fun and being creative. Y bueno, sin más, here's my conversation with Andrea Campos. Andrea, welcome to Café con Pam.
Thank you for having me, Pam.
So nice to meet you.
Likewise. I'm glad that we're connecting in such a fun way.
Yes, yes, yes. I was so excited to learn that we were going to interview you because you do awesome work and we'll just dive in. So the first question that we ask is, what's your heritage?
My heritage is that I'm Mexican American. Both my parents are from San Luis Potosí, Mexico. My dad immigrated to this country when he was 3. My mom, when she was 27. So I am first generation, still feel very connected with my family in San Luis and that side of my identity.
Did they meet here or there?
They met there. So funny story, my mom's best friend ended up being my dad's cousin. So on a trip that he came to visit, they just met by coincidence. He kind of convinced her to move, that whole thing. She's the only one from her family that lives in the U.S. And she's one of 13 siblings, like big traditional like Mexican family. But yeah, he convinced her to move to Chicago, a move which I know she doesn't regret, but kind of regrets considering how cold it gets there compared to San Luis. But yeah.
How interesting. And she got convinced and she was like, vámonos.
Yeah, she's like, let's do it. And I have so much respect for her to make that decision because at 27, she completely uprooted her life, moved to a country where she knew no one, didn't speak the language. And then the cherry on top was that her degree as an architect didn't transfer. So she truly had to start over. And as someone who has moved to different cities, like starting over is hard. Starting over in a country with different rules and different languages, I couldn't even imagine that. And my mom didn't have the resources like you and I have, right? She didn't have the internet.
Or the language.
Yeah. Or the language to just like help her out. She figured everything out on her own. And I really, really have a ton of respect for her.
Totally. So what happened when she got here? And did she know that her degree wasn't going to be valid here?
You know, I don't know if she like knew, but I know that she found out really quickly that she couldn't practice architecture here. So
dang.
As she tells me, you know, it was a really kind of tough transition from her because she had studied, you know, her entire life to do this thing and had started just like getting her career off the ground. She moves to the US and she kind of had a tough start where the only work she could get as someone who didn't speak the language and, you know, had a degree that for all intents and purposes was useless, was working at a seniors housing facility and helping take care of some of the senior residents. So she would take care of them. And she ended up kind of acting like a live-in aide for one of the elderly folks that she worked with for a while. And then to help like get her creative expression out, she started making like porcelain dolls and selling them and teaching classes for that as well, which I think is, again, just so impressive that she didn't know the language and in a few years went to teaching classes on something that is very complicated and intricate with like making porcelain dolls.
Yeah. In English?
In English, yeah. Because there was not that many Latinas in her community at the time. She got really lucky that the old couple that lived next to her, like next to us, I guess, when we were little, really took a liking to her and were just really sweet and open-minded people and kind of just, you know, showed her the ropes with how to make these dolls. My mom loved it and they started working together.
That's awesome. I love the resiliency that immigrant parents have or like our parents have, you know, where they just up and move. And then, I mean, it happened to me in a way because I'm kind of like an immigrant. It's a whole other conversation, but
I was like, what do you mean?
Because I was born here, but I grew up there.
Got it.
And so when I came, I was an immigrant. And so that identity shock of being an architect y llegar acá, and then you're like, I don't want to say nobody, but technically,
yeah,
you know, if you held that identity at some point and then aquí no sirve, it's like you have to redo it.
Again, like I just imagine that having been like a huge emotional and mental physical block, but at the same time being like, oh, well, I'm starting this life with someone and we're planning on having kids. So like, this can't just be about me now. Like my mother's a very resilient and I think selfless person in just how she navigated those first few years here in this country. Cause I don't know if I would have been able to do that, you know?
Totally. So you grew up in Chicago.
Yep. I grew up in Chicago and then eventually moved to California in 2015. Once I had graduated from college and everything, I kind of decided like, Chicago, you're great, but you're really, really cold. I'm done. I'm going to move to a sunnier state and kind of try to, you know, make my own version of the American dream happen.
What about her? Let's backtrack a little because you come from a family of artists, created like your mom is an architect. What were you curious about when you were little? What did you think this is what I'm going to do when I grow up?
When I was little, I think I was just a very curious person about everything. My mom likes to say that like, while my brother was kind of like, take one step, be very cautious, look around the street sort of kid. I was just like, mira mamá, mira mamá, mira mamá, just like running at everything, being like, look at this, look at that, look at that. And really kind of just throwing myself into every experience that I felt like throwing myself into. One time we were on vacation and she makes fun of me now, but she tells me that, yeah, you joined a swimming competition without learning how to swim. You just threw yourself in the pool. She's like, your dad and I just kind of watched you sink to the bottom, but like figure out how to get yourself to the other side. And you were fine. You won like nachos or something. And you were so excited. And I think that pretty much sums up how I like navigate the world around me sometimes when I'm like, oh, this is interesting. I want to try it. And I just dive right in.
How fun. When you decided to go to college, what was your first choice?
When I decided to go to college, the first thing I actually wanted to study was interior design. So back in the day, I don't know if you remember, those shows were super, super popular at the time, like Extreme Makeover, Home Edition, Trading Spaces. I loved those shows. And I was like, wow, these people are able to take these very like bland, boring white rooms and convert them into spaces that like that make you feel excited to be inside. Like, wow, that's so cool. And I remember having a conversation with my dad being like, hey, I want to go to school to study interior design. He was like, that's nice. Why don't you pick like a real career instead? And I was like, huh? And I think that was the first time I was like, oh, that's not a real career. Like, art is not a real career. Like, that was one of those moments that kind of stuck with me. So I struggled with a while trying to figure out, well, what do I want to study at school that kind of fits this real criteria? And I thought about graphic design. I thought about marketing. I thought about advertising, and ultimately ended up going the advertising marketing route. Because in my mind, I was like, oh, that's still creative. You still get to do like interesting things, but it's business. It's business as well. And like, that'll be a real job, right? That'll make my parents happy. And that'll bring me the stability that I know I want to have in life. And also like the stability that my parents moved to this country for me to have.
Yeah, that makes me think. So I'm a designer. I went to graphic design because I wanted to be an architect. For kindred spirits, it's really funny. Por hacer el destino, I ended up not being an architect because I chose not to. I mean, I did art school, but it was the safest, most, you know, which is graphic design. So yeah. Instead of solving problems, you know, through architecture and building people's homes or whatever, then I decided to solve problems with images, which I was like, that's still kind of, you know, it's going to put me into the safe zone. And hearing you talk about this makes me think how a lot of children of immigrant, first, second, even generations have this kind of like whisper behind our ears of like, you have to make them proud.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like we put the sacrifice, and which is so valid, and the struggle, for lack of a better word, of what our ancestors did, almost to a fault sometimes, to where we put it over what we want. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think for me, I didn't realize how much that impacted and influenced my decision making until recently. When I like look back at not so much my child years, because I think when you're a kid, like you're kind of like, everything's awesome, like you're unaware. But the second like society and culture start shaping you, that's when you start to take on this baggage. And there are moments where I remember having conversations like with my dad being like, you are different. You are in predominantly white spaces. Like, you're going to have to work harder. And like that weight absorbing, right? And being the only in those spaces and understanding that like, yeah, things don't operate the same way for me. You're just listening to the news and realizing that like Mexican was only ever associated with gangs, violence, illegal immigration, and never feeling a sense of pride in that and taking on this responsibility that like no one told me I had to, but taking it on to make sure that I was the best, brightest version of Mexican humanly possible, because I wanted to show the world that another version was possible. And that really sat heavy with me and really, I think, influenced in a lot of ways my older, like kind of childhood life and my young adult life to pick decisions that were safer, that were more palatable, because I wanted to fit in to what I think we all thought we were supposed to fit into at one point.
It's a thing that I think only we understand.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have conversations about this with my partner, who's a white man. And after there's context and dialogue, then he's like, interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's like, no, I'm just going to do what I want. But for us, it's like, well, we're doing it for all these people behind us.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So you decide to go to marketing. And you start your career after that. Was there like a, como una espinita, like a little something that was like, this is not it? When did you get that?
Instantly. School was great. I feel like I learned a lot. I was like, oh, this is interesting. There's a cool blend of like psychology that goes into marketing and advertising. There's writing, there's production, there's creativity. I feel like I got like a cool experience at school. But then the second I got my first job, probably 2 months in, I was like, I have made a horrible mistake. This is not what I thought it was going to be. I can't get excited about selling people flea and tick medication for their pets. Like, it just, something was missing.
What was the job?
So I was an assistant account executive at a big agency in Chicago. And that basically means like, you're the lowest man on the totem pole. But since I didn't go to art school, I could not be considered for the art director or the copywriter roles, which were the more creative ones. So they put me in the, hey, you're good at talking with people you'll be the client facing role, which like crushed my soul a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean a lot, but I was like, okay. And 21-year-old me was like, it's okay. You can probably just pivot into the thing that you really want to do after like a year or 6 months or something, like kind of talking myself up. Like, you didn't just go to 4 years of school for this to not do it. And pretty early on, I just realized, I'm like, wow, this is not right. But at that age, I don't think I realized that it wasn't right because it wasn't right for me. I thought like, oh, it isn't right because the client is a little bit boring, or, you know, there's a more exciting agency I could work at. Like little like problems, like I can fix that, you know?
How long did you tuck yourself back into it?
Many years. So I knew very early on at this first job, I was like, oh, this isn't it. So then I moved to a different agency that did more experiential events. So that's like live events, productions, music shows. And that was a lot of fun. And I actually loved it because the team that I was on was like half production, creative, half account. So I was like, great. I'm getting to actually use my creative skills. The budgets were insane. I got to work with brands like Malibu Rum, Absolut Vodka. I produced shows for Maroon 5 and One Republic. It was really exciting to be doing that kind of work at like 23, right? But again, like a year and a half in, little voice was like, something's not right. And I was like, okay, well, maybe it's the city. Maybe I need to just like move. So that's when I decided to like leave that job and move cross country to San Francisco. And this time I decided to try marketing in-house. So I worked for Gap Inc. on their foundation and sustainability team. It's like the small like nonprofit that they kind of run as a company. And for a while that was great too. I was like, wow, like getting to work on social impact causes and using like creative work on that is so special. Same thing. It's like, but I'm not loving it. After like 6-7 months, I'm like, something is off. And it went like that. It went like that for almost 10 years till early 2020 when I was finally like, you know what? Yeah, basta. Just like you've been saying for years that you want to like quit and do your own thing. You've been saying for years that you want to, you know, be in a more creative role. Like, give yourself the chance to try.
A ver, espérame, because you're going too fast to the present. I have questions.
Okay, ask away.
So you kind of like give some roles a chance and then it's like, well, not quite. Let's move into a different one. And then there's a little something. Did you have any mentors? Did you have any conversations with anyone that you'd be like, is the grass greener, you know, 5 years later? Or was there someone that supported you through all of this during that time?
Yeah. So in those early jobs, I don't think I really had a mentor until I had my job at Gap Inc. And the manager I had there was just this like wonderful, wonderful woman who saw me not only as like a great employee, but also saw the talents that I had that I wasn't using. And she was the first person that really gave me stretch projects that went outside of my role and was like, hey, I got the entire Adobe Creative Suite installed on your computer. Or, hey, you said you wanted to do more photography. Like, we got a camera for you to just like, you know, help out with this shoot or do that. Or I asked my friend on this team to just like have you shadow them for the day. And she was really the first person that I think helped me realize that like, oh, these creative things that I want to do are actually like very close to me. I just need to work on like building that skill set. And I'm in the right building. Marketing has illustrators, photographers, art directors. I'm just not in the right room. So like, how can I start to navigate towards that? And that role really kind of gave me the flexibility and freedom to pick up a camera for the first time, which was my first, I think, true form of creative expression as an artist. I shot on nights, weekends, whenever I really could, from like 2016 through the pandemic. Like I was constantly just shooting the world around me, and it really helped me to slow down, to really understand how an art form works as a business. I started making a lot of friends with different photographers, with different editors, because I knew that that was something I wanted to explore. So I was doing what I could to really educate myself on the business side of it. Like, how hard is it to get clients? How hard is it to find jobs? Like all of that stuff.
And it's hard. I was a photographer too.
It is very hard.
And that's the thing that, especially in the creative field, I feel like, because I don't know, I'm a business coach now. And so I get to experience a lot of businesses in different industries. And what I keep noticing, me having been a photographer before and seeing other people that do that any kind of creative work, you have to stretch the left brain, which is the very intellectual piece of like, all right, not only do I have to make time for my craft,
absolutely,
which takes time, but also I have to do my books and I have to market myself and I have to quote people. And so I feel like in the creative field, running a business, I would argue that it's a little bit harder than other industries. I don't know. I might get called out here, but
no. I would agree with you. Obviously, I'm biased, but one thing I've learned, especially over the past couple of years, or one thing I should say I've experienced over the past couple of years, is that people do not give artists or creatives the same respect that they give founders of CPG goods or founders of tech companies or whatever, when in all actuality, they are doing the exact same thing. Like, for example, myself as an artist, I am my accountant, I am my marketer, I am my new business person. I do lead marketing gen. I do all the things that someone who's starting a business to sell, I don't know, socks is doing. But for some reason, like, the founder title is a lot sexier to the world than the artist title.
Yeah. And I think, to your point, I think of a founder, for example, who typically outsources the thing. The artist has to create the thing and work the thing.
Not only does the founder outsource the thing or have a team of people who are, you know, supporting them in their endeavor, but 9 out of 10 times they have funding. They have a structure set up for them to succeed, whether that's like business mentors or financial support. Most artists don't have that, which just makes it so much harder.
Agreed. And it's harder to outsource because you can't outsource your illustrations, you know, you can't outsource.
Exactly.
What I learned that I could do when I was taking pictures was that I could outsource my editing, but then you have to teach people to edit like you. So it's a whole thing. So back to your story. I love how this manager that you had kind of like saw you, all the pieces, different intricacies that you have as a human, and said, okay, Andrea, let's give you a camera. And I'm curious as to when she heard that from you, or was that something that she just noticed? Or did you have a conversation where you're like, kind of want to do this?
No, we had a conversation pretty early on, because she wasn't like a normal boss that's just like, okay, let's go over, you know, what you need to do, what our tasks are for the week. She's like, tell me about you, tell me about your life, tell me about your goals in and outside of work. She was a very open, like genuinely warm person. So I just felt incredibly comfortable with her and was happy to share with her, like, yeah, this is what I'm doing for work, but here's what I want to be doing for a career. And she understood that there was a difference there. And she didn't take that as a red flag, like, oh, this person is going to leave the company. She was like, hey, I have an opportunity as a manager to help this person develop in a way that makes them better at what they do, so that wherever they work, they will be a better employee. If that's with me, great. If that's with someone else, fantastic.
I love that. What would you say to the listeners that may be like, ooh, I don't know if I feel safe sharing what I want to do? How did you get that strength to not be like, ooh, is she going to think that I want to leave?
Ooh, I think it is definitely, it's a case-by-case thing. There are some managers that I've had in the past that I quite literally would never say anything like this in front of them, because I would know that I'd get negative feedback back, or they would just be cold and dismissive. So to anyone who's like looking to get that sort of like professional development support from their manager, I would just say, like, don't be afraid to ask, but maybe start with small things. Like, I didn't ask immediately for like photography lessons. Exactly. Like, test the waters, being like, hey, I noticed the company offers XYZ professional development courses. Can I take them? You know, and kind of start building from there. Cause I mean, as much as I wish everyone had a manager like Mandy, that was her name, or that is her name, I know that that's not the case, because I've had many managers who are not Mandy and who would not have been so, like, I think, open and supportive of some of my like extracurricular desires, hopes, wants, and dreams.
For sure. For sure. So test the waters, listeners, and then, you know, express yourself. Like, you never know what might be on the other side.
Yeah, I think test the waters. But before you even test the waters, figure out what you want, right? And make that very clear to you. Do your research to see what kind of offerings your company has. A lot of companies have professional development courses that they can take. Some of the companies I've worked for in the past even offer stipends for you to take classes outside of work. So definitely take advantage of that. That's something that I kind of look back on now being like, why wasn't I always taking advantage of that? And they don't always have to be like going back to school. It can be a pottery class. It can be an acting class. It can be other things that can support your career in unexpected ways. Like, we should all be able to present. Acting is a great way to be better at presenting. So I definitely think start with that. And then yes, test the waters to see like what is and is not possible here.
Yes, I love that. Okay, let's take a quick coffee break because we're getting to the present of your story.
Okay.
Andrea, do you drink coffee?
I actually don't drink coffee.
What?
Is that bad?
Not bad. We don't judge.
I've actually never really, I had coffee once in college and I really didn't like it. And I think it might be a genetic thing, but my dad doesn't drink coffee at all. And he's the kind of guy that will wake up at 5 a.m. every day without coffee and like never really needs it throughout the day. And for me, I'm generally of that too, where if I have caffeine, I'm shaking and I'd be talking at you like a million miles a minute. So it's probably for the best that I don't drink coffee. But I do have my agüita here.
What's your beverage? Is it agua, your beverage of choice?
Yeah, I'm simple when it comes to my beverages. I love water. I love having my sparkling water. And then sometimes I'll get fancy with like a Spindrift or something else. But for the most part, I love me some regular water.
Nice. So when you wake up, do you have a morning ritual? Do you drink water immediately?
I should. I don't. Typically, I kind of wake up, I'll stretch a little bit, then I'll drink water, and then I either go for a walk or I'll go to the gym and try to get some sort of like body movement going. Especially now that I draw for a living, the sitting down and kind of being hunched over, not good for the body. So I need to make sure that I'm, you know, keeping that working in a way that keeps me healthy and allows me to do what I do.
For sure. For sure. On my end, we are having this conversation at 5 o'clock. And so no coffee for me because I wouldn't sleep.
Yeah.
Too late.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking ginger turmeric tea.
Love that. Is it the Trader Joe's one?
Yeah.
Big fan.
Yeah, for sure. It's a good one. And it's one of those, like when I run out, I run to the store. It's great. And with this weather that we've been having in California, I've been drinking tea all day.
Same.
I was going to buy the fancy like mug that keeps your coffee warm, but I'm like, I'm not that, like, I need to meet a business goal to buy a $200 mug, you know?
Yeah, they're expensive.
Yeah. So I bought this little cup warmer, and I don't like to use the same cup all the time because, you know, that creative brain, I'm like, my yeah. ADHD is like boring. Let's go to the next one. And so this little cup warmer keeps my beverage warm all day, which is great for days like this.
That's so nice. Yeah, it's been so hazy and so cold in SoCal, which for those listening, we are not used to that at all. So keep the warm beverages, the blankets, all of that. I wish I had a fireplace. I really do, but I don't. That would just make this kind of like the perfect setting to use it.
This is the time.
Yes.
When California says like, oh, this is what it feels like to be in the mountains.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to the show. Hola, Vanis. By the way, if you are enjoying this conversation and you want to keep talking about it, if you have some comments and maybe some questions that you have, follow me on social media and let's keep that conversation going. This is your reminder to screenshot and tag me at Café con Pan Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And let's keep talking about it. Tell me what's resonating. Tell me what isn't. Tell me what do you wish I asked the guest. This is your chance. And if you're on TikTok, I'm at Café con Pan Pod as well. Let's stay connected. Andrea, so you pick up a camera and you kind of fall in love with photography. And then you decide, I really like this. When do you make the decision to go on your own? And what kind of like catalyzed that?
Yeah, so after working at Gap with that incredible manager, I decided like, hey, I really, really love photography. I want to do this full time, but I need a portfolio to make that happen. So like, what can I kind of do to expedite that process and really challenge me to grow as an artist and grow as a photographer? So what I actually did at first was take 5 months off of work and just backpack as a way to be like, you know what? these are my 10,000 hours. I'm going to spend as little money as possible, and I'm just going to shoot every single day and just get better at this craft. And I did that, traveled all around. I came back to San Francisco, which is where I was living at the time, and I was ready to go freelance and kind of just start building a client base and focusing on that full time. But right before I had left my backpacking trip, I had this like medical issue kind of get finally properly diagnosed after 5 years of like misdiagnosis, this autoimmune disease that I have. And they were just like, hey, by the way, you're going to have to go on medication for a year and you're going to need surgery in a year and all of these things. So I was like, ah, crap. My options at that point were like either put your trip off, don't do your trip, or do your trip and figure this out later. So I chose door number three because I was like, no, I need to do this trip for myself, for my soul, for my creativity. I'll figure this out when I get back. When I got back, I kind of crunched the numbers and realized, I'm like, wow, with medical expenses and having to cover my own health insurance, it is going to be very, very, very hard for me to jump into photography full time. Let me find a job, do it for a year, get what I need to do to like take care of myself health-wise, and then I'll jump. So that's what I did. I ended up working for a startup for another year. It was an incredibly toxic company. Like truly, if it had not been for the health insurance, I probably would have quit after a month. But I knew I have to stick this out because like my health is on the line and I know this is something I have to take care of. So as soon as my surgeries were done, I was like, all right, the end of the year is coming up. I'm going to quit after the holidays and just kind of make a plan from there. So I gave my notice at the end of January with the intention of really going freelance starting March 2020. I had planned to move to Los Angeles at the time too. I had a bunch of little like freelance gigs that I had lined up for myself and was like, all right, I don't know what the next year is going to look like, but I'm confident that with these projects and what I have saved, that I'll be able to figure it out. And I'm just going to, you know, network and keep building this community so that I can thrive in this space.
I have so many questions. Oh my gosh. When you decide to take your three month trip?
4 or 5. I don't remember now.
3 to 5. Did you save up for it?
Yes. The thing about me is like classic Latina, eldest daughter, first generation. I had been saving for such a long time. Like I wasn't going out to fancy dinners. Like I wasn't buying new clothes because I knew I'm going to need that money later. And I knew that I was going to need it on myself. And I don't think I could articulate at the time why I was being like such a little squirrel and just trying to save. But I think it's because deep down, I knew that I had to at some point in my life go out on my own and that I didn't have generational wealth as a safety net, that I had to kind of build my own safety net. So that's what I was doing, especially when I was living in California. Like I really got lucky and did what I could to find apartments that were incredibly cheap considering the market.
Yeah, because I'm like, San Francisco is expensive.
It is very expensive, but I can tell you that most of my time there, I spent about $1,000 a month on rent, which is wild.
What?
Yes. I got so lucky that every apartment that I lived in was like, someone's been here for like 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. They have rent control from like 1999. I'm like, great, fantastic. Sign me up.
That's wild. So you have savings and you're like, I can take care of myself while I go on this trip. And then you get the diagnosis and you've been managing this for 5 years being undiagnosed. And finally, they tell you, did you fear maybe that as you're on this trip, and I don't know how much it affected you physically or as you were dealing with this, but did you fear like, ooh, what if I get sick when I'm on this trip? Or did that cross your mind or no?
I wasn't afraid of getting sick on the trip because the disease I have is called Peyer-Romberg syndrome. It's a rare autoimmune disease that essentially manifests by slowly deteriorating the left side of your face.
So specific.
It's very specific. And it's also kind of random when you're like, wait, a disease like that exists? Like that, I didn't know it existed until I got diagnosed, like right before I went on my trip. For me, I was like, hey, there's something going on with the left side of my face. And I had seen so many dermatologists and doctors and they're like, you're fine. It's just a scar. Or, oh, it's nothing. You know, don't worry about it. But by the end of 2017, it had gotten really, really bad to the point where strangers would stop me on the street and just ask me really invasive questions like, honey, is your boyfriend beating you? What's wrong with your face? Like, are you sick? And physically, the transformation was really painless, but like my mental health took a really, really bad turn. Because as you can imagine, like, your face is your, you know, calling card to the world. And as a young female, especially from a culture like the broader Latinx community that places such a big emphasis on appearance and beauty, like, it devastated me. It made me feel like I was 2 inches tall. So when the diagnosis finally came and they're like, hey, you have this disease, I was like, okay, finally, I know what I have. I'm not happy I have it. The doctor kind of gave me an option. They're like, hey, we can put you on this medication that's an autoimmune suppressing medication that should slow it down. And then we can talk about surgery when you get back. But I was in such a like bad place emotionally that I was like, no. I don't want to go on an autoimmune suppressing medication and then not go on my trip. Like, it is more important for my like health and happiness to go on this trip. This has already gotten pretty bad. It's not going to get much worse in 4 months. I will deal with this when I get back.
That's a great lesson of discernment, maybe, or choice.
Yeah.
You know, choosing what's really important and what maybe you knew that was going to fill your soul the most.
I knew. I was like, if I don't go on this trip, I will regret it deeply for the rest of my life. And if I'm already depressed, I'm only going to get more depressed if I stay and go on this medication, which I did end up going on when I came back. And it was miserable. Like, an autoimmune suppressing medication is not something that is a fun experience for anyone. It's essentially a form of like light chemotherapy, and that just sucks. I felt tired every day, not like normal tired, like, hey, I need to sleep for 16 hours a day tired. I feel like there's like lead going through my veins tired. And at least at that point, I had the last like 4 or 5 months of like this immense fulfillment and these photos and these memories that I'm like, you know what? I did that. I did that for me. No matter what else happens in the future, I know I did that for me.
I love that. Thank you for sharing all of that. You put yourself first. I love this. You make the decision, take the trip, then deal with your health. Hopefully with the trip, your mental health improved and with the diagnosis as well. And then March 2020. Now we can fast forward.
March 2020. What I can say about that is that I had finally mustered up the courage. I had finally gotten my health, you know, everything back in a good place. I'm like, all right, this is the best version of me that I can muster up. I am going to, you know, take that leap of faith, spread my wings and fly. And I did for about 2 weeks. And then the pandemic hit, and then stay at home orders hit. And it just felt like I hit a wall that came out of nowhere and just fell straight back to the ground. And I just remember being so shaken, because weeks before, my friends and family who knew that I had wanted to go out and do something on my own had been so supportive. They were like, yeah, you're finally doing it. We're so proud of you. Woo. And then the pandemic hits and people start losing their jobs left and right. And some of those same people were like, oh, wow, I guess you really shouldn't have done that. Or, oh, you picked a bad time. And I mean,
but you didn't know.
I didn't know. No, but it just sat so heavy with me where I was
Nobody knew.
No one knew. But I'm just like, Dios mío, like, what kind of sign from the universe is this? You know, like, stop, halt. And at the time too, like, I was trying to just like recover like my self-esteem because of everything that had just, you know, kind of transgressed with my face and that awful manager that I had at the toxic job before I left. So I was kind of just left in shock where it was just like, oh God, well, what now? You know?
You were a photographer at this point.
Yeah.
And when the pandemic hits, you can't take pictures because you have to see people or you have to go places, and this is full lockdown. So what does Andrea do at that moment?
Full lockdown was scary because at least in San Francisco, they were like, photography, production, illegal currently, like banned. So I was like, great, what do I do? And I kind of panicked for a moment and I was like, all right, I can do one of two things. I can either try to get like a job again, a job in marketing, a job in something like I've done before, just to feel like I have income coming in. Or I can just like ride this wave out. And at the time, it was all like, oh, this will be like 2 weeks or a month. It's going to go by super quick. And I was like, oh, I mean, I can do that. I have savings. I've saved so that I could go on my own. Like, a month or two of not working, totally not a big deal. So I decided to kind of use those first 2 months as a way to continue to work on myself, on my courage, on my confidence, on my sense of self-worth, because of my illness and because of, you know, a bad work experience that had really been tested. And the way that I explored that was by deciding to really just do things that made me feel good and filled me with joy. So I kind of treated myself like a day camp counselor and day camp attendee, and built this like artist residency for myself where like every day I would do something that just made me happy, that was fun and exciting and simple. So I would bake and like decorate cakes. I would go on these long walks and like pick up little flowers or leaves or something and then just make art with them when I got home. I would draw. I was playing with Play-Doh, just the types of things that like made us feel good as kids. I was doing them every day as a way to just like feel
fun.
Yeah, it was actually really fun looking back at it because I was unemployed and I was just doing things that like made me feel good. I was like, oh, this is like being a kid again.
Nurtured your inner child.
Exactly. I was like, I haven't painted in such a long time. I haven't drawn in such a long time. Like, wow, this feels good. This feels good in a way that like I didn't remember. And through doing those exercises, drawing resurfaced. And I just remember being like, wow, this is so fun. Like, you know, maybe I want to just focus on this for a little bit. Because for me, drawing kind of became a form of art therapy. It was the thing that I could kind of just lose myself in for hours and not really care about what else was going on because I was kind of creating my own little world, which was super, super sweet.
So then you start drawing and start posting things on social media.
I started first kind of just drawing like scribbles on pieces of paper. And then I found an iPad that I had bought like 6 months before and hadn't touched because of work and life and was too busy. And I was like, wait, let me grab this. And I downloaded digital drawing tools, which I had never drawn on before, but found that they were like super intuitive. And from there, just I really, really started drawing just like every single day, every single day. I think because on like the iPad, you can like erase things so easily and kind of change your mind. It really felt like there was no pressure. And that allowed me just to kind of go wild. And after I had like enough like silly things drawn, I kind of got the idea that I should just start an Instagram for this because I'm locked up right now, like we all are quarantining. I want to build a sense of community. I think my friends will think that these drawings are funny and I like that. So that's where Drea's Doodles was born.
In the beginning, it started like, okay, let's just nurture that inner child and do things that feel fun. But then once you grab the iPad and you started drawing more and more and more and kind of like dove into the exploration of your doodles, did you ever doubt like, this is not going to go anywhere? It's just for me.
I know I didn't set out with the goal of it turning into anything. For me, it was truly like, this is a fun outlet. This is meant to be my little pocket of the internet where it's always sunny. Don't take yourself too seriously. Have fun with it. Use this as a way to weather the storm.
And so then, was it the MLK post that went viral?
I had a few things kind of go viral, but yes, in 2021, that was the one that went like viral, capital V, like huge, where I was like, oh, shoot. I didn't know this could happen, but cool.
So what did you do after that? Because you had already had some momentum, you know, and then like the, what went through your head?
Before the MLK post going viral, I had had like a few other things pop up and that had attracted people to ask me to work on illustration work professionally. And I was like, wow, this is cool. Like maybe I should give this a shot. But when that post went viral and I had thousands and thousands of strangers on the internet DMing me and saying, wow, you're an artist. I love your art. It was the first time I think I saw that I could accept that title, that I was this thing, like that the world gave me permission to accept it. And I think that's when things finally started to click.
Did you ever feel like imposter of like calling yourself an artist?
Oh, yes. I still kind of feel weird saying that because I think, and tell me if you agree, but for a long time, I believed that like in order to be an artist, like you had to come from a wealthy family, that this was like, that career path was only reserved for like a special few, right? Or that you had to go to art school to be an artist, that you had to have, like, you know, certain boxes that you've checked in order to earn that title. So for me to have people telling me you are an artist, it felt disingenuous, and they meant it with all the sincerity in the world, but I couldn't accept it because I didn't see it for myself yet.
For sure. And even like for me, I went to art school, and I remember my painting class, my teacher was like, you need to switch to painting. And I was like, no, because I don't have time. I paid for my college. So I was full-time working and going to school full-time. And I remember I had friends in the art department, painting majors, that would live in the art building. And so similar to what you just shared, for me, what happened is that I couldn't be an artist because I didn't have the means to just do art.
Yeah.
I had to work, which is so what now thinking about it is like, wow.
Yeah. No, it's a very real thing.
You're an artist. You've always been an artist. And so then how do you decide that this is okay? This is what I'm going to do. And that's how I'm going to make a living.
I don't think I fully decided. I think what I kind of told myself was like, hey, I think you're onto something. There's clearly something special here and it makes you happy. Why don't you just try and see what happens? And that's what I did after that. I still had like a freelance marketing job that I had gotten, but I had enough time in my schedule to still draw every day, draw things that made me happy. I started pitching myself to different editors and publications and just trying to get some momentum.
How did your previous career inform how you kind of like brought yourself out into the world?
I think my background in marketing and advertising has actually been really helpful, because while I may not know that much about the publishing industry or the editorial industry or even like illustration, because I'm still very much learning, what I do know is how to put a pitch deck together, how to cold write a good email, how to find the right email. Like I had this kind of like marketing savvy business acumen that I was able to bring in to this new role as artist and actually apply it to myself, which still feels weird. I don't enjoy marketing myself. I would much rather market like a pair of jeans than I would my own art. But I am happy that I know how to for when I need to.
For sure. I love that, because I think from the 300 plus people that I've talked to, interviewed, it always kind of goes back to that previous life before people had. And it always kind of like, it's the prequel to the current, you know, and how we always, while looking back, it might feel like that was the wrong place for me. It still gave you some element of knowledge and wisdom that you can now apply to the present.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer that skills are so transferable. And in my case, although it's frustrating that I'm like, oh, I wasted 10 years of my life. I could have been doing this like right out of school or in school. I didn't waste it. I learned other skills. I built a network. I built a community that actually now is being incredibly supportive of this new path and is helping me to continue to propel it forward.
What was your first job or gig, I don't know, that you were like, oh, this is like a thing now. It's my thing.
The first big project I ever got was from Athleta, the female-focused athleisure brand. And they had reached out because they had a new store that was opening in San Francisco. And someone on their marketing team had seen my artwork online and they wanted me to design some postcards for the new store opening. I was like, oh, postcards, cool. Very excited. Like, you know, kind of put that together, sent them the artwork. They responded being like, oh my God, we love these postcards so much that we actually want to blow two of them up into giant window displays. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And I think for me, that was like, oh, you know what you're doing. Like, you don't, but you do. So just lean into it, right?
It's working.
Exactly. Something is working. So again, why don't you just try? And I remember after that, I scurried and like made a website and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna try for real at this and see kind of what happens.
How fun. How did you know how to charge?
Good question. I was Googling things left and right. I was trying to find blogs that other artists, illustrators, muralists had kind of put together outlining pricing. And that's one thing I will say I have noticed is that the visual arts community, so artists, illustrators, people in the graphic design space, are really generous with their knowledge and their time. A lot of folks have blogs or YouTube channels that break down pricing or how things work. And that's how I learned a lot of this at the start.
Did you know other illustrators at the time? I'm sure you do now, but at the time?
No. I was following people on Instagram, cold DMing, being like, hey, I have a question. Hey, I have a question. Hey, what's up? And some people actually responded and were like, oh, I would consider, you know, X, Y, and Z things. Thankfully, I will say I had a lot of knowledge in how to price myself in the photo space. And while they're not the same, I understood things like licensing and usage and all this, I think, vocabulary that made it a lot easier for me to jump into illustration without knowing the industry at all.
For sure. What would you tell Andrea in 2020, March 2020?
Mija, you're about to go on the ride of your life. Enjoy it.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Okay, so what's your next thing now?
My next thing is that I have a bilingual first words book that is coming out at the end of March. I'm really excited about it. It is so cute. It is essentially just meant to help young kids learn English and Spanish or both at the same time. And I had such a fun time putting the book together because I got to research just popular words in English, popular words in Spanish, and just draw a bunch of really cute characters, which is what I like to do. I like to draw cute things. So it was really, really fun putting it together.
How did you decide that your next thing was going to be this book?
Yeah, I was actually inspired to do the first words book, the bilingual first words book, honestly, by my own upbringing and just the fact that I had worked on bilingual projects in the past. I wanted to continue to play in that space. It felt really natural to me and my story as someone who grew up bilingual. And also, I think it's something that we just need to have more of in literature and in kids lit in particular.
Was the Pollo book your first bilingual book that you worked on?
It was. Yeah. Con Pollo was the first bilingual book and the first book I ever really worked on, which was really special.
How fun. How long did it take you to believe, like, I'm doing this thing? This book that potentially could be like huge.
With Con Pollo, when they first emailed me, like I didn't even believe it. I thought it was a scam. No one expects to get an email out of the blue one day saying like, hey, Jennifer Lopez and Jimmy Fallon want to work with you. That just doesn't happen. So when it did, I was like, okay, Nigerian prince, like, no, I'm not falling for this.
Right.
And I think I kind of like, I held on to that mentality for a little bit as I was going through the motions with them because they didn't offer me the project right off the bat. They were like, hey, it's between you and another artist. We just want you to see who can design like the chicken we like the best. And then we'll go with that person, which was both a really empowering position to be in and a really scary position to be in.
Yeah. No pressure.
Yeah. I was like, all right, either I'm going to regret this for the rest of my life or I'm going to draw like the cutest little chicken they've ever seen and we'll see what happens, you know? And thankfully they chose the chicken that I drew, but that process took months. Like they reached out to me in early spring and I did not find out that I got the role till late summer. So I was just sweating.
Oh my gosh. The suspense.
My anxiety was through the roof. So when you're like, when did you fully believe? I'm like, when I finally got the email months later that said, hey, they want to work with you. And I was like crying, like, oh my God, they do? That's great. Yeah, sign me up. I'm down.
Wow, that's a long time.
It is a long time.
Did they put both of you artists together to like, or was it like you send us work and then they decided on their own?
Yeah, it was just me sending them artwork and they would review. And I have no idea who this other person is or even if this other person even really exists. I have no clue. Maybe they were just right. Messing with my head. I don't know.
That's so wild.
It was a crazy time.
So the book, Con Pollo, happens because it's bilingual. Then you got into this world of like, well, this is really cool. Is there a stat on how many bilingual books exist? Probably more now, but.
You know, I can't think of a stat off the top of my head for bilingual kids' books or picture books, but the stat that does come to mind is that as of, I think it was 2020, only 5% of picture books were written or illustrated by Latinos. And I think only 5% feature Latino, Latina characters, which is so, so small considering what the demographics of the US are and so, so small considering what the demographics for 18 and under will look like in the next couple of years, right?
Totally. That's so wild.
Yeah. Once I got into the industry and kind of realized that, I was like, wow, this is messed up. But like, I also already knew that because I started to reflect on the books that I read as a kid. And I was like, I never saw anyone like me. No one sounded like me. No one looked like me. There were never any stories that like showcased bits of my culture. So I think that was like a little bit of inspiration where I'm like, I want to talk about this thing that I know very, very well. And that is my identity as a Latina. That is my identity as someone who's bilingual. That is my identity as someone who's like a first generation third culture kid who's just trying to figure it out in the US.
Totally. How was the conversation with your parents?
It's been interesting. I think they've been on the roller coaster with me. So it went from, I'm going to quit my job. And they were like, oh, okay. To fast forward a year later, hey, I just got this book project with Jimmy Fallon and Jennifer Lopez, Tears, Velita. Like my mom had been praying the entire time from when they emailed me to when they gave me the project. Months and months. Like we went through multiple like Virgencita candles, the whole thing. And I think that project was like the, oh, wow, she can do this. And since then, it's been really, really cute because I've caught them talking to like their church friends about me and my projects and like upcoming things that I've told them, like, don't say anything, but I'll hear them like telling their church friends.
Pero no le digas a nadie.
Yeah, no le digas a nadie. Mira, me dijo que no me diga, pero, and I'm just like, mom, I told you like, do not text the WhatsApp group. If your sisters know, everyone knows. And she's gotten better. They both have. But at the beginning, I was like, por favor. Do not say a single thing. Like, please, please, please. But that just like shows that they're excited and that they're, you know, happy that I'm on this journey. And everything that happened last year with Con Pollo and being on The Tonight Show, like they were my biggest fans. Like they recorded it. They sent it to our family in Mexico, the whole nine yards.
That's awesome. So cool. So what's next? Tell us where we can find the book, the first 100 Primeras Palabras. Tell us where we can find you and all your work and all the things. Share all the links.
Of course. You could find my Bilingual Primeras Palabras First Words book on websites like Amazon, at places like Target, bookshop.org. I will share all the links with Bamdu so she can share them with you. And you can actually find like all of my books on Amazon and most likely too at your local bookstore. And as far as what's next, I'm going to keep making books. I love storytelling. I'm going to challenge myself to ideally write and illustrate my own book. And I'm starting to also develop products and kind of carve a space for myself in the licensing and art space because I want more people like me to have a chance. I'm trying to just kind of make that door a little bit wider and see what happens again.
You never know.
You never know.
How fun.
Thank you.
Thank you for inspiring us to create and nurture that inner child and with your awesome artwork.
Thank you for having me. This was such a fun conversation. And I hope if anyone is out there and they have a little voice in their head that's saying like, maybe I should do something creative. Just start. You don't have to quit your job to do it. Start doing it on nights and weekends, do it at a small scale. Just fill your soul with that light because I promise you, you will feel better after you do.
Indeed. I concur with that because recently I was sick. I was in the hospital.
Oh, no.
With some unknown shit that who knows? We're still figuring it out. And coming out, I was like, okay, I need to slow my roll and nurture that inner child because I've been drawing my whole life and I've been drawing after work. So I decided that I'm not going to work until 9 p.m. So now I'm, you know, I have a regular schmegular like working hours. I work for myself, so it's always hard.
Yeah, you know, I get that.
My grandma is always like, dile a tu boss que ya terminaste. And I'm like, yeah, my boss is mean. She don't let me stop working. So I make myself stop working. And I've started drawing and it's so cool.
It's so fun.
Yeah, I'm like, I just feel so good. And I was sending my friends, because I send them like the sketch and then like the colors and then like the details, you know? And I was like, I finished two on the plane today. And it just feels good to just kind of finish things.
Honestly, that's one of the things I love about just using like the iPad and like Procreate and stuff is that it lets you just do it on the go and you can kind of just share it in real time with people. And you also get that cool time lapse, which for me is like, oh, I didn't realize it took me 4 hours to do that, but dang, like...
Right.
It's cool. It's a kind of a fun, it's a fun way to track your progress as an artist. And I don't know, just like a fun way to keep everything nice and organized.
100%. I was looking at one of my time lapses today because I was sending to friends, and there was a moment where I was like, wait, is the video still playing? And it was still playing, but it was like all the tiny dots that I was doing. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like it's a lot of time. Did you share your social media?
Oh, I don't think I did. You can follow me along on Instagram, TikTok, all the things. I'm at Drea's Doodles. I like to share a bunch of my artwork and also just like tips and tricks on how to use different things and kind of break into the industry.
Yay. Last three questions. What's your remedio?
For when I'm feeling down or feeling like a little sick, I love sopa de fideo con un poquito de limón. I think it's like more nostalgia than anything, but I'm like, it makes me feel good every time.
For sure. Especially with this weather.
Yes. Honestly, I kind of want that now.
Me too. I'm going to go get some. And your quote or mantra that you live by right now?
Lo que es tuyo, nadie te lo quita.
And the last one is, what is your tip, trick, or tool for productivity that you want to share?
Honestly, mine is really simple. Just take your phone, put it in another room, put it in a drawer. Do not disturb. The less distractions, the better.
Yes. That one we've not heard. I like it.
If I have my phone by me, I find myself just wanting to look. So I hope that helps someone.
Totally. 100%. I did a challenge once where I measured how many times I just went to grab my phone without grabbing it. And it was like disturbing.
Yeah, it's unhealthy. Sometimes I just for fun, I'm like, what was life like before I was addicted to this?
Totally. And before we even had phones.
Yes.
What did one do?
Yeah.
Put your phone away. That's how we can figure it out.
Yes, exactly.
Bueno, Andrea, thank you so much for coming to Café con Pam. This was super fun. Thank you for sharing your story with us and inspiring you with your work.
Thank you, Pam, for having me on Café con Pam. Stay shining, listeners.
All right, listeners, that was my talk. My talk with Andrea. Let me know your thoughts. How are you nurturing that inner child of yours? How did you have fun when you were little? And what if you went back and explored it? That's why now that I am radically taking care of myself in a much more conscious way after I was in the hospital, I'm choosing to go back to what I used to lose track of time doing when I was little, which was drawing. And so I'm inspired so much by Andrea's drive to and actions to just take on the things that make you feel happy. And so it was, I think for me, this episode was really timely to, in a way, get validation from someone else who said, hey, I'm choosing to do something that makes me have joy, regardless of what that does for the world. Because I think maybe this is a first daughter, a first daughter thing. But as the eldest, I often feel this responsibility to just to execute, to always be doing, because I'm being watched and witnessed as the ejemplo. And so maybe, I don't know, that's what's coming up for me. But bueno, if this is your first time here, welcome to Café con Pam. I hope you stay. If you would like to stay, I invite you to hit the subscribe button on the platform that you're listening on. And furthermore, this is a time when I invite you to leave a rating and or a review. Apple Podcasts is one of the biggest platforms that our listeners use to listen to Café con Pam. And so if you are on there, you can leave a rating and a review. And we appreciate all the words, whichever ones you choose to leave. All the stars that you want to leave us, they're all appreciated. Even the one-star reviews, those are fun to read. I'm glad I activate you in a way that makes you want to leave me a one-star. If you're wondering, well, how do I get started with a review? If you're angry at me, it's going to be much easier, as you may see the one-star reviews. If you're not, it's typically harder because how do you leave some good thoughts when you are happy about something that you just heard? Some questions that I may leave you with. What did you expect before you listened? What happened after you listened? And if you were to recommend the show to a friend, how would you say that? How would you write that to them? If you were to send a text like, hey, friend, check out this podcast because blank. So I appreciate all the comments and the time that you take to leave me your thoughts. Now, if you are on Spotify, I'm going to start leaving questions in Spotify for you. And so if you're listening on Spotify, go back to your device, check out the episode, click on the episode, and you'll be able to either see a question or a poll sometimes, and you'll be able to participate and have a fun and exciting discussion within the episode, which is super cool. I just recently found out that they rolled out this tool, and I'm definitely going to use it. And I invite you so lovingly and gently to take the time, because on Spotify, you don't leave reviews, but you can respond to podcast episodes. Because I know sometimes you're like, oh, I want to say something as you're listening to us. Well, now you can. And so check it out. If you are on Spotify, you can leave us a rating and also answer the question that I leave you in the episode. Frankly, I'm not going to promise to do it on every episode just because of my own bandwidth and capacity, and also because I'm modeling. I'm choosing to radically support myself so I can show up for you better. And so you may or may not see a question in the episode. Depends. And if you do, thank you for answering. Let's connect. I would love to connect and hang out in different places and spaces outside of this podcast. Check out social media at Café con Pan Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, at Café con Pan Pod on TikTok. We have a Discord server where we hang out. I'm there every day. That's where Power Sisters hang out every day. We co-work all the time and we talk about all the things. First generation problems. We talk about remedios. We talk about shows and TV that we are watching. It's super fun. StayShining.club. Head over there. Join us. And if you are curious and you want to check out my work, I am open for hire as a coach. And of course, I have my accountability program, Power Sisters, that I built because I needed something to hold me accountable. So I created the program and it's called powersisters.club. Check it out. If you are interested in additional places and spaces for my work, cafecompam.com. Right now, we just closed the doors to Power Sisters. We can always add yourself to the waiting list. So you are the first to know when we reopen and it's super fun. Iwana listeners, thank you so much for your thoughts from last week's episode. I gave you a little snippet of what happened, and I've received so many messages from you who've listened to the episode, and you've shown up for me, and I'm so grateful. And I don't have any updates as far as my health goes, frankly, because I have to go find now another doctor to get me a second opinion, to go through all of the tests that we did and see what happened, get a conclusion. However, like I shared in at the beginning of the episode, I've been much more radical when it comes to my health and my well-being. And one thing that I've chosen to do is to not work all day, to take the time to go outside, really take the time to go outside, to turn off my computer and go do some drawings. I've completed a few in the last few days, which is super fun. I am choosing to move and dance in a way that I love and enjoy, because if I don't prioritize my health, lo demás no importa. Entonces, I invite you to consider and think about. I'll leave you with this question. What could you prioritize for yourself today? Thank you so much for being here. Y como siempre, stay shining.